TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Stolen Elections. Mark Crispin Miller writes in his book, Fooled Again, that both the 2000 and 2004 elections were stolen, and why the right will steal the next one too, unless we stop them. In his book, Miller presents massive documentation backed by 56 pages of notes on how this was done. In the talk you are about to hear, he describes the mindset among both major parties and the media that allowed the theft to happen and go unchallenged. Mark Crispin Miller is a professor of media studies at New York University and a well-known author and public speaker. This talk was recorded at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California, on May 4, 2006. Miller spoke under the ornate proscenium arch of this landmark movie house, standing in a small pool of brightness from a single spotlight. Mark Crispin Miller.
I'm delighted to be here. I want to thank all the people who brought me out. The lighting's not too scary, is it? Actually, what I'm going to say is pretty scary. Do you know what we're up against? Are you sure you know what we're up against? Well, you know, to the extent that we're talking about particular candidates, to the extent we're talking about crafting a message with humor, to the extent that we're talking about registering voters, we're missing the point completely, all right? Now, all this stuff's important. Don't get me wrong. It's crucially important. It has to happen. But there's a very big if in such talk, because such talk presumes that you can have a fair election. And we have no right to make that presumption. I'm going to read you something from my book, Fooled Again. This is just a little anecdote from the epilogue, which includes it's a kind of an overview of all the stuff that the press repressed, suppressed throughout the campaign of 2004. All the stories that they didn't report because it would have made, you know, Bush look bad. From the sublime to the ridiculous. There's a whole lot of stuff, though, a lot of stories, little local stories about the Gestapo tactics that the Bush-Cheney campaign used throughout the campaign to make sure that the crowd was always completely receptive and unanimously adoring. So here's one such story. In Pennsylvania, on October 28th, the Bucks County Courier-Times reported that Simi Nishal, an undecided voter from Lower Makefield, had been denied admittance to a presidential speech, along with her husband and two children, the older one a Bush supporter, because the co-worker who drove the family to the campaign site had a Kerry Edwards bumper sticker on her car. "I deny you the right to attend this rally," the party bouncer told her. "He was so rude, he made me feel like a criminal," Nishal said. I said, "That's not fair. You're losing a supporter." He said, "We don't care about your support." Now let that sink in. We don't care about your support. Remember when Bush told somebody in Philadelphia, somebody who had the temerity to criticize his policies during some photo op, and Bush said, "Who cares what you think?" You heard that story? Who cares what you think? This is what the Bush administration is always saying to everybody. When I say everybody, I mean everybody, okay? They're saying this to the American people. They're saying this to world opinion. They don't care. They don't care about your support. They don't care. Now, has there ever been an administration in this nation's history more upfront in its contempt for public opinion? Has there ever been an administration in this nation's history more brazen in its lawbreaking? You know, under Nixon and under Reagan, the stuff that, you know, got them into trouble was stuff that kind of tried to keep a secret. Remember? I mean, Watergate, the whole thing was all about the secret and how it was kept a secret. And Nixon kept promising, we're investigating this and everything. And it turned out that that was a lie. Everybody was shocked. I remember vividly the day that Iran-Contra broke. Remember this? Big press conference, and Reagan looks all befuddled or more so than usual. And Ed Meese, he brings Meese out, and Meese starts to tell them what happened. It came as a total surprise. Nobody had a clue. Nobody knew. Some Lebanese newspaper had broken the story. And, of course, in those days, the American press tended to report things like that. Okay? Now, Bush proudly, loudly insists that he has the right to have American citizens under surveillance. Now, Bush himself says that he invalidates any laws that he doesn't happen to think are good laws, because when he signs them, he says, you know, well, this law sucks, you know. You heard this, right? Maybe you haven't. And if you haven't, it's no reflection on you. It's a reflection on the Fourth Estate, which doesn't report the news anymore. That's part of the problem here. There has never been an administration like this. You may think you know what you're dealing with, but believe me, you don't. What's that from? Anybody can tell me? Chinatown. Okay. This is Chinatown, an old movie fan. Okay. Now, what we're dealing with is extremely frightening because it's not a left-right thing. It's not a Republican-Democratic thing. It's not a partisan issue. It's a civic issue of profound importance. It's a civic issue of the profoundest importance. Obviously, we could make a long list of the emergency situations that face us now. I mean, there's obviously a crying need to get to the bottom of 9/11. There's obviously a dire need for us to do something about the environment. 40% of species worldwide are now facing extinction. Global warming is a fact, whatever Jerry Falwell thinks. Things are really so bad that significant sectors of the corporate world are mobilizing against it. Things are so bad that there's now a big network of evangelical groups whose mission is to do something to halt global warming. We could talk about this grotesque and catastrophic war. We could talk about ending the war. We could talk about impeaching Bush. Okay, let me tell you something, all right? If you don't have the right to vote and have that vote be counted, you will not make any progress of any kind on any other front. Okay? All of your freedoms are predicated on the freedom to vote. This is what Tom Paine said. It's as true today as it was then. The reason this administration is so profoundly dangerous is that they don't pay lip service to the idea that they have to court public opinion. The press, I have to laugh, and it's not a joyous laugh. When I listen to the press say these things that have been, you know, implanted into their frontal lobes by their sources in the government, they talk about Katrina, right? Another absolutely unspeakable crime, right? Say, well, this is clearly undone all the work that the White House has tried to do to court the black vote. You heard that one?
No.
Court the black. You know, that's when you want to pull your own head off, you know, and shoot baskets with it. You know what I'm saying? Court the black vote. Who are they courting? Whom do they court? Do you know what we're up against? Okay? This is not just business as usual. All right? This is not just capitalism. It's got a lot to do with it. It had a lot to do with Hitler. But Hitler was not the puppet of I.G. Farben and Bayer and Thiessen and all those other guys. They were in on it. They loaded their pockets because of it. They were extremely happy about it, solved their labor problems. It was like a dream come true for them. Okay? But they weren't the driving force. Hitler had other things on his mind. And in this case, it's not just Wall Street. It's not just the neocons. The war is not just about oil. Is it not clear that this administration has an apocalyptic agenda? Isn't that abundantly obvious? I mean, capitalism wreaks a whole lot of serious harm, and unrestrained, it's a destructive force, no question about it. But capitalism does not want to blow itself to smithereens. See, the lords of capital want to keep the money in the family. They want the kids to inherit the money. They want the estate with the rolling lawns and the you know, staffs and all everything, the cars, all that stuff. They want that to last for a long, long time, maybe forever. I guess I'll quote Chinatown again. How much are you worth? Am I boring you with this? Okay. Jack Nicholson says to Noah, well, I'm confusing an actor with a character. J.J. Gittes says to Noah Cross, how much are you worth? And Noah Cross says, I have no idea. How much do you want? J.J. Gittes says, 10 million, 20 million. And Cross says, oh my, yes. And Gittes says, how much better can you eat? What can you buy that you don't already own? And Cross says, the future, Mr. Gittes, the future. All right, that's capitalism. It's pretty evil, okay? That's greed, the paranoia of greed. But that's, you know, as destructive as it is, there's a certain rationality to it. You got lots, you want more, okay? It's no surprise that British Petroleum is working on alternative fuels. It's no surprise that the insurance industry is mobilizing itself against global warming. It's no surprise that Business Week devotes a cover story now to global warming. It's no surprise that Time magazine devotes a whole special issue to global warming. It's not because they've gone left. It's because they can see that the water is rising past their blowholes. You see? They don't want to die. You know, and there I'm with them, because I don't want to die either. The Bush administration's attitude towards the environment is apocalyptic. It is not just based on capital. It is not driven only by the timber industry and the oil industry and the automobile industry. It has theological roots. It has roots in dominion, dominionist theology, Christian reconstructionism, the view that destroying the Earth's resources is not just not a bad thing, it is a very good thing. Because the sooner we trash the planet, the sooner he'll come back. Now, rational people tend to discount this kind of thing precisely because it's so irrational. And a lot of people say to me, no. This is just stuff that they use to fool the pious. They're fooling the dopes, the bumpkins in the red states, while they're meanwhile filling their pockets. All right, that stuff goes on. There's no question about it. But if you look at this government's policies, you can see that the policies are based on an apocalyptic impulse. They obviously don't care if they trash the planet. See? A lot of billionaires do care. Dominionist billionaires don't care. Their economic policies are destroying this country. I'm not just destroying the middle class, but destroying the country's economic infrastructure. They're destroying it. This is why 169 tenured business professors signed an open letter to Bush before Election Day 2004 saying they weren't going to support him because his economic policies were catastrophic. This is a letter that originated at the Harvard Business School. You know who got his degree there? Bush, right. 169, no coverage in the press of this open letter, right? The Financial Times endorsed Kerry. The Economist endorsed Kerry. 60 newspapers in so-called red states, although I don't believe in this red-blue stuff for a minute, who had endorsed Bush in 2000, now refused to endorse him in 2004. So, you know, if you read about the proceedings at Davos in Switzerland, where the world's financial elites gather, the mood there has been funereal since Bush stole power in 2000. So they want to destroy the economy. They want to destroy what we call the environment, which is another name for that is the planet. Okay? What their attitude towards the war. Understand that this is not only about oil. Bush himself has said that this is a religious war. You know who was in charge of the whole program to track down and nab the Islamist terrorists? You know who's the military person in charge of this? William Jerry Boykin, General Boykin, who made news a couple of years ago for touring fundamentalist churches in his full dress uniform and giving talks about how the enemy is a guy named Satan, who gave talks saying that God put Bush in the White House, who showed slides of the operation at Mogadishu. In one, you can see a black cloud. He points out that it's a demonic presence. The man's insane, okay? The man's a religious maniac. There was some controversy over it, not much, because nobody wanted to cover it. What did they do? They promoted him. He has had a great deal to do with the policies at Abu Ghraib. If you think that all that religious torture, you know, the desecration of the Quran, trying to sexually rouse these Muslim prisoners, you think that stuff's about oil? I'd like you to explain the connection to me. Before Fallujah, the Marines were having open-air baptismal ceremonies. There were loudspeakers leading them in prayers about the blood of the Lamb. There were people driving tanks into Fallujah, tanks that had, like, the New Testament written on the side of the gun barrel. There's images that people all over Europe saw. We don't see them. Now, you know, according to the end times theology, Baghdad actually will play a very important role at the end of time, and that's why our military has no compunction about entertaining the thought of tactical nuclear weapons in that war and in Iran. This is a religious war, okay? Not just about oil. So there's a kind of apocalyptic smugness at work here, a kind of what the hell, it's all going to come to an end soon anyway. Let's do what we can to bring him back as soon as possible. And one way to do that, in fact, the primary way of doing that, is to subvert the will of the electorate. This is not just one of the many evil things the Bush administration does. This is their primary goal. This is what they're all about. They could not possibly succeed. With an agenda like theirs, they could not possibly succeed ever through the usual democratic methods. This is an unpopular president. He has always been unpopular. There was a surge of nervous adulation for him after 9/11. It was based entirely on fear. But he's never been popular. He's not the kind of guy you want to have a beer with. This is all Rovian propaganda dispersed through the press. He's unpopular. His agenda is deeply unpopular. The only possible way that a regime like this could succeed at the polls is to subvert the process. The only possible way in which a regime like this could predominate is to control the media, is to gerrymander, is to play games with the expatriate vote, is to do all the stuff that they did do in 2004. They have to do this sort of thing because they can't win in the normal way. They're not a majoritarian movement. This is what we're up against. This is what we're up against. We're up against a theocratic movement with close ties to certain industries and corporations, with close ties to the neoconservatives around Cheney and Rumsfeld, obviously, a movement that is intent on the creation of a Christian republic. Now, the evidence is copious. This is not speculation. The evidence is all in Fooled Again and in other books. They want a Christian republic. This is where the muscle in their movement lies. The muscle in their movement does not lie with the neocons. The neocons have no constituency. Nobody follows the neocons. The neocons have had to link up with the theocratic Republicans because the theocratic Republicans, while they share certain of the policy goals of the neocons, are also the ones who have the grassroots support. They have the 20 million or so Christian Zionists, the people who really put their heart and soul into the campaign, people who at the grassroots level, as I discovered in doing the research for this book, literally did everything that they could possibly do to cut the Kerry vote and to pad the Bush vote because they don't believe in democracy. They argue that the framers created the United States as a Christian republic. They believe it for the same reason that they believe the universe is 6,000 years old. They believe it for the same reason they believe that homosexuality is chosen. They believe it for the same reason that they believe that abstinence-based sex education works. Okay? They believe it for the same reason that they believe that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I'll tell you a story. A friend of mine was working in the Veterans Administration. Great guy. He's not there anymore, so I can tell this story. And he went to see one of the executives in his department. This is one of the political appointees, a Bush-Cheney person, chosen to, you know, run this wing of the VA. He had to go and report to this person the number of troops who had solicited medical care since they returned from Iraq. The number was stacked. It's like 130, 140,000. So he tells this woman, this is the number, this is how many, you know, it's a lot of people. The woman smiles and shakes her head and says, "God doesn't like ugly." He said, "Excuse me?" She said, "God doesn't like ugly. See what you can do with those numbers." Now, I can recommend a whole bunch of books for you all to read, like Esther Kaplan's book, With God on Their Side. Michelle Goldberg's got a book coming out in a few weeks called Kingdom Coming. It's from Norton. Kevin Phillips has a book out, American Theocracy. My own last book, Cruel and Unusual. Bush-Cheney's New World Order is about the theocratic basis of this regime. Stephanie Hendricks, who's from hereabouts, has a book called Divine Destruction, which is on the theological roots of this administration's anti-environmentalism. I'm not making it up. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I don't believe that history is determined by some everlasting cabal of the Illuminati and the Rothschilds, you know, and the CIA, and they're always there. And anytime a righteous voice pipes up, it is struck down by them. That's the X-Files view of history. And I don't believe in it because I believe in democracy. See, I believe in progressive action. I believe that if people do political work and organize, they can get something accomplished. If you think that there's an eternal cabal directing human history, you might as well either join it, right? Or just lie down and die. But, you know, those of us who believe in American democracy, especially those of us who believe in American democracy and would like to think that America and the planet will maybe endure for a little while, you can't afford to succumb to such a paralyzing illusion as the one I just described. You can't do it. Now, my book and this issue have been the object of a media blackout now forever. Let's tell you a couple of stories. In late 2003, I had a meeting with John Kerry because I wanted to talk to him, as I wanted to talk to all the Democratic contenders for the nomination, about the crucial importance of doing something about the electronic touchscreen machines. Okay? Now, I assume everybody here knows about the problems with these machines. It's like having a secret vote count. No paper trail. They use proprietary software, although I don't think open source is a solution either. And they're manufactured by private vendors with long, close ties to the Republican Party. You tell a Canadian about this, you'll see a facial study and astonishment, right? Get the jaw drops to the floor. You can't be serious. This is a joke, right? No. That's how we're privatizing our election system. So none of the Democrats are talking about it. So I and a network of other election reform activists were still out there, bloody but unbowed. I went to see Kerry at a fundraiser, George Plimpton's house. So I basically said to him all the stuff I just said to you, that they're paperless, proprietary software, private vendors, extremely hackable, also incredibly expensive, but that didn't enter into it at the time. Just wanted to tell him all this. And so I had like 5 minutes before he worked the crowd to make this pitch. So I'm, you know, sort of hurrying through all these crucial details. He's giving me a look of grave concern, you know. And, you know, I could already see, you can see when you've lost somebody, you know. You can see when their eyes kind of go blank. And they think, where's the men's room? Or, you know, who is this lunatic? And then he said something grave and concerned and forgot all about it. And I know that he forgot about it because I believe he was the last Democratic contender for the nomination to bring the issue up publicly. The first was Dean. And then Kucinich mentioned it, you know, Kerry was the last. Okay, so in the meantime, you know, he goes on reporting for duty, remember that? He runs, he wins, as far as I'm concerned. But they tell him, you know, the brain trust around him, the people who've been losing elections for years and who are working on losing his, you know, Bob Shrum and Mary Beth Cahill, they're all saying, you can't win this, you can't win it, you might as well, you know, you can't win, I got a dinner to go to, you can't win. So why don't you just, you know, just do the gracious thing, let the nation heal, you know. And he did, he threw in the towel, and that was a catastrophe. That was as catastrophic in its way as the theft of the election was in the first place. Yeah.
That was part one of a two-part talk by Mark Crispin Miller, author and professor of media studies at New York University. Come back when TUC Radio returns to hear about the next meeting with John Kerry after the second stolen election. Miller refers in this talk to his most recent book, Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One Too, Unless We Stop Them. Visit TUC Radio's website at www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Go to the newest programs section for a link to Mark Crispin Miller's site. Please find a pen to write down a phone number for information on how to order an audio tape or CD of this talk. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your CD or tape order really is our only support and is essential in keeping us on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE. For information on how to order, you can get your tape or CD by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.